Welcome to Overshare, a podcast and event series where we have honest conversations about the tough shit creatives don't publicly talk about often enough. We cover topics like creative insecurity, career failures, and how not to become a total douchebag when you finally gain some notoriety. Our goal is to get to know the creative industry beyond the highlights of portfolios and Instagram feeds, and to better understand the ups and, more importantly, the downs of what it takes to get there. Struggles we can all relate to, even if we haven't reached all-star status quite yet. Overshare was created by Working Not Working, an invite-only community that connects companies with the universe's most respected, most awarded, and hardest-working creatives in advertising, design, production, and tech. Companies like Apple, Airbnb, Droga5, and the New York Times use Working Not Working to discover and hire talent for freelance and full-time gigs. Learn more at workingnotworking.com. This episode is brought to you by our friends at FreshBooks, an intuitive tool to simplify how freelancers and small businesses create and send invoices to their clients. With FreshBooks, you can create invoices, log receipts, manage expenses, and all that other crap us creatives hate to do. God, I'm so bad at that stuff. Anyway, to claim your free month, go to freshbooks.com/overshare and enter overshare in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
So we drink this all at once?
Yeah, why not?
Is that how a shot works?
Yeah, like, here we go. Cheers.
Okay. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Cheers, everybody.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Justin Genek. If you've listened to this podcast before, you know that I'm the co-founder of Working Not Working. This is the live recording from our third Overshare event, and this time we did it in Portland for Portland Design Week, and that's Portland, Oregon, not Maine. But we did it this spring in Portland Design Week. Typically in New York, we've been doing it in a dive bar on a Friday afternoon. Really small, intimate setting, maybe 50, 60, 70 people, and me and whoever I'm interviewing. And so I really wanted to do the same thing when we got to Portland, but apparently Design Week is popular and there's gonna be a lot of people who wanna come to this event. So Claire completely ignored me, and instead of doing it in a dive bar, she decided to find the largest space I'd ever seen in my life. It was in this space called The Outpost. It's the new co-working space from XOXO Fest, and it's basically an airplane hangar. So the complete opposite of what I wanted. And when I walked in there, I was kind of scared shitless when I saw the massive space and the 300 chairs set up. But luckily, I was on stage with three amazing guests, Kate Bingham and Bert, Rich Tu, and Adam Garcia, and they were incredible and honest and sincere and really put a lot of their selves out there for the audience. You know, I think people really connected with it, and hopefully you do as well.
So we're going to start off with some tough questions. What's your favorite curse word?
Balls.
That's a good one. I like it.
That was my grandma's favorite curse word.
Really?
She would just mutter under her breath, and she'd go, "Oh, balls," which is so cool to hear, like, a 75-year-old woman go "balls." And so, like, I just want to carry it on. So
it's a family tradition. Yeah, it's good. How about Rich? Favorite curse word?
Fuck, but with like 16 U's in like 109 size font.
109 point, yeah?
Yeah, 109 okay, cool. point font.
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 Adam?
I think mine is now also balls. I love imagining Kate's grandmother just whispering that, so that's my new favorite.
I think
favorite.
It's all our favorite now. Okay, what's your favorite color? This is supposed to be an easy one, guys. This is a warm-up one. Rich, anybody?
Oh, yeah, we can do this. Okay, so black.
Okay.
I like black.
Adam?
Like warm red. Like O32C.
Oh, O32C. That's a favorite of mine as well.
Pink, green, and orange.
Oh, okay. Like combined to like a muddy brown?
No.
Oh, okay.
Just
okay.
To get, like kind of like a weird Neapolitan.
Okay.
We call that Kate Brown.
Kate Brown. Color you refuse to use?
I kind of use all of the colors.
Well, that's
like that's kind of like what I do.
It's very democratic of you.
But no, I do. Yeah. I use all the colors.
I use them all too, but green is usually my last one that I'll hit.
Okay.
Usually the last one.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you got to use all the colors.
All right, fair enough.
The colors. Yeah. Come on.
I just know like Tom Sachs won't use purple. And like it's like a studio rule. I like that.
Oh. Like, him and Draplin don't like purple.
Draplin doesn't use
purple.
Purple is an amazing color.
I love purple.
It's a gorgeous color.
I love purple.
Who doesn't like purple?
My mother loves purple.
So this is very
king's color.
Very deep portion of the questions. All right. All
right,
here we go. We're gonna do this faster.
My dress is purple.
Your dress is purple. We love it. One thing, like one word to describe one thing you love about Portland.
People.
Okay.
Healthcare. It's real.
Adam.
Open?
Open? Okay.
Yeah.
One thing you hate about Portland in one word?
I don't like it when people are late.
All right, so you don't like late people.
I don't like late people.
Did that even happen in Portland? Everybody was here at like 6:30 today.
No, it was great, but like it's like I'm like, it's still, even though I've been here for a while, yeah. like the Midwest in me is like, I show up like I'm here.
Yeah.
And it's, I like things to start on time. It really, my students know that too. Like that's like the one thing that I will get really upset about.
Okay.
And then they'll be,
I like knowing what sets you off because you seem so even keeled, so that's good.
Don't be late.
Someone's gonna walk in right now and she's gonna
so
go ape shit.
They're gonna catch Kate's wrath.
Rich, what do you hate about Portland? You've only been here 6 months.
Yeah, being moist all the time.
Don't say moist. I hate moist.
Being moist and saying the word moist.
Yeah,
I hate it.
Why'd you gotta do that?
Everybody's uncomfortable now, man. Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I think the only thing I really hate about Portland is when Rich is super moist. And he's so close to me all the time.
We can all agree on that. Let's see. What's the biggest Portland cliche people think isn't true but is totally true? I'm not from here, so I have a lot of assumptions about Portland. Like the fact that there wasn't pickles here, I was shocked.
Yeah.
There's pickles in my studio, though. Oh,
there we go. Okay.
There's a person that makes pickles in my studio. Okay. I'm not even kidding. No.
See, that's the Portland I'm expecting to see.
And the hallways smell like pickles.
That's delicious.
Okay. I've found that a lot of the cliche things about Portland that when I first got here 6 years ago, I was kind of I was noticing and thought were like weird or making fun of in the way that sometimes people do. Once I started embracing them, I started like loving the shit out of those cliche-ish things.
And now I kind of miss them because a lot of them are gone. Like
they're already leaving.
No, but like I remember when I first moved here, there were like armies of tall bikes everywhere. Yeah. And now I haven't seen a tall bike in at least like a year.
Is Portland not
even
keeping itself weird?
Yeah. Where are all these tall bikes that I keep hearing about?
Yeah.
Like jousting tall bikes.
Who has a tall bike in here?
Anybody have a tall bike?
Anyone? Spencer, right. Anton.
This is very disappointing. No. Okay.
Does anyone ride a unicycle in this room? I'm being very serious. Is
anybody
a unicycle
ride a unicycle
here?
Riders?
I remember I was walking down the street. No, I was in an Uber one night. And then it was really late at night. And then someone was crossing the street holding a unicycle. And I'm talking to my driver, talking shit about that guy. Because I'm like, man, there's
Don't
no one out in the street.
Him.
I'll talk about shit. I'll talk shit about the guy who was like outside of the car. Well, my thing was he was carrying it and not riding it on an empty street. Okay. And I was like, what is this? So I started talking shit about the guy. And then the guy driving the Uber was like, you know what? I ride a unicycle. Yeah. And I was like, oh, shit. I was like, what are the odds that I'm talking shit about the unicycle guy to a unicycle guy?
Yeah, and that's a very close-knit community, so I wouldn't do that, man.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to get your ass kicked in about 4 minutes.
The unicycle mafia is going to come get me now.
Yeah, going to keep you. All right, and how many people up here are breakdancers? Yeah, you two both are. Don't be shy. I heard you were in a breakdancing crew.
Specifically, the dance isn't breakdancing. It's a different kind of dance.
Okay.
That is traditionally seen as breakdancing, but it's a very different art form. I don't want to get into it, but I will.
Okay. And then I heard someone up here got a free mattress off the street and may still be using it.
Is that me?
Did Darren tell you that?
Darren did tell me that. He said, ask Adam about his free mattress.
Yeah, it was gross. Those were dark, dismal times. I was living in Philadelphia for 2 years on a mattress I found in an alley. And now I'm here with you guys, so that's what you get.
All right, cool. All right, we're going to get some real questions. Okay, how long have each of you lived in Portland, and where did you come here from?
I have been here for 8 years, and I came here from Starkville, Mississippi, where I lived there for 4, but I'm pretty Midwest, so.
All right, Rich.
Nice. Been here for 6 months, came here from Brooklyn, and before that I was raised in Jersey. Yeah. Jersey.
Oh, man, Jersey gets excited. I like it.
Hi, I'm Adam. I've been here for about 6.5 years. I moved here from Philadelphia, where I lived on a dirty mattress for 2 years. But I'm originally from beautiful Minneapolis, which I still represent every day in my heart.
Aww.
That's great. That's great. All right. So now, being in Portland, there's a design community here. Being designers, What do you feel like Portland brings to your work that maybe you didn't have or find in the other cities you were in? What's unique about its influence on you?
Well, I mean, considering that I moved here from Mississippi and there wasn't any design firms at all, I would say that it's quite a difference. But I definitely feel like I was a professor at Mississippi State University, and I had wonderful students, but yet there wasn't a lot of ways that we could access what designers were doing, what illustrators were doing. We did, however, Mississippi State had access to a large fleet of vans, and I would load up the van with my students, and we would drive 3 to 4 hours a couple times a term, and we would go to Birmingham and New Orleans and Memphis. I'm really grateful that I don't have to drive a huge church van filled with students. It makes me feel a lot more safe in general, but I definitely, one thing about teaching here is just the fact that the community is so generous and their doors are open, and it's kind of ridiculous to not tap into the community, especially when you're a design student and you're teaching in a design program. And so that's really been such a game changer. It really has. And I, even though I've been here for 8 years, I still... I'm so in awe at how just generous the community is and how wonderful that they've been to me and my students that it's a game changer.
Yeah. Well, I've only been here twice for a total of maybe 4 days, but you get that sense. It's very supportive, which is great. Yeah. Well, let's go to Adam.
Yeah.
Just to switch up the flow.
Thanks. Honestly, part of the reason that I moved here, I got a job, but there were a couple people that were here, and Kate was one of the human beings that I knew that was already here, and I knew of that community, and when I mentioned the word open earlier, I think this place really does exemplify the idea of openness creatively, collaboratively. I think that's absolutely incredible, and it does not exist like this in other places where you can kind of do what you want, and you can have a system of collaborators or a network of people that are positive and outgoing, and being a part of PSU Friends of Graphic Design, and just kind of meeting all these amazing people that are here that are wide-eyed and willing to jump into weird shit with you is pretty great. And right now is a really beautiful point in Portland to do that.
Yeah, that's great. Now, Rich, you've been here for a total of 6 months.
Yeah.
Has it had an effect on you so far?
Oh, totally. I think one of the big reasons why I even came here, why I entertained the conversation of leaving, honestly, I never thought I'd leave New York. When I made the move, I had just incorporated. I had like fully become like a businessman, and also I was doing really well in my freelance life as well. And I was like, dude, I'm crushing it. I'm living that dream. But then the thing, once the conversation or the opportunity came to come out here, I was thinking, you know, work-life balance. Maybe that's something that'll like really change my life. Because in New York, I was doing like 12-hour, 13-hour, 14-hour days. And it got to a point last summer where I was doing 2 weeks on where I'm like, you own me for 2 weeks. I will go to hell for you for 2 whole weeks. But then 3rd week, don't fucking call me. Straight up. Like, don't even talk to me. I'm not coming in. So I did that like for 4 months. And then once I got the call to come here, kind of out of nowhere, I was like, I really have to pursue this. And then I find myself like looking for energy, but also providing the energy that sustains my own creativity. I never left the East Coast time zone in my brain, so I still wake up at 5:30 in the morning and I'll try to do a drawing first thing, and I'll go to the gym first thing in the morning, and I'll do a full day work, and I'll come home and I'll, you know, relax with my beautiful fiance, and it's a whole thing. Like, it's the balance has really changed, but the energy, I'm still bringing that energy to it.
And from what you guys, you know, I'm making a gross generalization here, but you can tell me if it's true. It seems like there's not a lot of egos in this town. Is that? Am I assuming things that aren't true?
I mean, it's definitely not something that...
Like in a good way.
Yeah, in
like,
a really
oh, you
good
poor
way.
Things. You don't have crazy egos like us New Yorkers. And a like, wow, that's really nice to be in a community that seems that like
totally.
Egoless and supportive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
I think this is different. Like, it's just, it's not New York. There's a cutthroatness that doesn't need to exist here because of the creative infrastructure of the city.
Yeah.
It's just different, you know?
Well, it's like, it seems like someone else doesn't have to lose in order for me to win. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, we can all win.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
That's totally great. True.
Now, we can all win.
We can all win. That's very burning.
We can all win
us.
And go home. and actually sleep.
Yeah, and have a life outside of work, which is great. Now, what would you say is your, what are you struggling with right now?
Well, I mean, wow, you just dive right into
we had a lot of layups for the first 10 minutes of this
thing. The serious question. I can tell you. I mean, I think it's beautiful that you are discovering a work-life balance right now, but I feel like...
Thank you.
I think that's definitely that's definitely something that I have been struggling with for many years, where it's just, it's kind of like, where does that exist? And especially where, you know, a lot of people are talking about how work is play and play is work. But if there's like, if it's all like one crazy, amazing smoothie, it's still like a big ass work smoothie too. And so it's like, it might taste good.
Can someone tweet that?
But I think it's the balance. And I think, I mean, one of the things, this has been probably one of the hardest years that I've had professionally, because I took on this position at Portland State as the associate director this year, and that meant that I was teaching less, and that, which, again, I hearing myself articulate that, like, teaching less, that's, like, the dumbest thing I could have done. Like, I love teaching. That, like, that gives me fuel for, like, my work, and it gives me fuel for everything. And so I took that away and I added more like administrative work and more like, I was the whole thing. I'm like, oh, be the change that you want to see. And it was actually really hard. And I just quit that last week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I did. And so it was, that was a really hard thing, because I don't quit things either. And so I am going to stop doing that work at the end of this year, because I'd want to be back in the classroom again. And I just, yeah, that was really hard. And it was like totally killing a lot of my freelance work too.
Well, that seems like a hard thing. I don't know. I have a hard time with that, like being honest with myself and actually taking the time to assess how you're feeling in a situation about the work you're doing and all that. So like that takes a lot to even like be able to pause and be like, oh shit, I really miss teaching and I don't want to be doing this.
Well, I don't think
whatever this
I
is.
I had like a whole like weird moment in a meeting. I didn't mean to quit. It just
Oh, did you go nuts?
I didn't go nuts, but I did do the thing where someone was saying how they wish that my heart had been in this more, and I went, I hate this job. And then I was like, oh, fuck.
Those are fighting words. That's straight up fighting words.
And I know. And then I was like, and then, of course, I did this really strong, empowered female thing. After I said, I hate this job, I started to cry. And then I was like, oh, shit, now I'm crying. And then I was like, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. And it was fine. So, but I wasn't, that was not... like the whole like scripted plan that I had been practicing in my head for a couple weeks. Yeah. Like that was not.
Your body revolted.
It did. It was like a fight or flight sort of situation. Yeah. And I think I did both. Yeah. I was like, I'm fucking out of here. And I'm also like, I hate this job. So it was a weird combo. So.
Nice. That's amazing. Like Rich, what are you struggling with right now? Like, coming from New York, being here, working full-time after freelance for so long.
Yeah, totally. Well, I'm struggling with shedding the bit of the New Yorker out of me. You know, I remember when I first got here, I was like riding the MAX train, and I was like hoodie, sunglasses, like don't fucking talk to me, thinking like, you know, like have to be in the zone, you know, like on the way to work. But then, of course, going to work at the Swoosh, everyone takes the same fucking train. So, like, you know, you're inevitably seeing everyone at work, and then, like, eventually you start opening up, you start becoming a human being. It's like an animal, like, walking back into the forest and, like, seeing a butterfly land on its forehead and shit. You're like, what the fuck? You know? So, like, that's really, like, where I'm at, just trying to, like, my next hurdle is really to become an outdoorsy guy. So, you know, like going out to Mount Hood and like, you know, doing like going to the coast and stuff, because I never done that because I arrived during rainy season. So that's really...
If anybody sees Rich hiking, take a picture and send it to me, please.
Exactly, yeah.
That's what's up with your beard. That's where it came from.
Exactly. Well, this beard happened because I had appendicitis 5 weeks ago, but that's why that happened.
That's right. We're glad you're doing okay now.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Adam, what are you struggling with right now?
Oh, I don't know.
No, do you want to get the couch over here?
No,
we'll just lay you down. We'll go to it.
Yeah, let's bring it over.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm kind of a new business owner, and I'm not the best at it. And it's a struggle, and I have some employees, and I have a couple, you know, spaces that I have to now take care of, and a lot of people do that in here. I never really have. I have the last couple of years, but it's a new kind of chapter. So it's a struggle. It's what I always think about, no matter how open I try to get or how inspired I try to be. It's always kind of like down here, like pushing around on my insides.
Right.
So trying to get through that.
Well, because a lot of the stuff with running a business isn't inherent in our skill set as creative people. Like, hey, being responsible or looking at bills or any of that stuff. I'm saying this as a guy who owns a business, and I'm responsible for all of that shit. But no, that's the hard stuff, because you're like, hey, I want to create, and I got into this to create, and now suddenly I have people's salaries I need to pay, and I need to keep the lights on and all that stuff. And that just adds other pressure that, you know, affects your creativity. So I think that's that. I think, is anybody else running their own business right now? Like, it's anybody else think it's really easy? Yeah, see, exactly.
Good.
Yeah,
One person with their hand up? Yeah, we'll talk.
Yeah. Please help Adam. Now, do any of you guys consider yourself perfectionists? Does anybody here consider themselves a perfectionist? No? Oh, man, I'm a control freak. Perfectionist asshole. All right. Anybody?
I feel like there's a difference between a control freak and a perfectionist.
Oh, do tell.
Not to get into a semantic debate, I have control freak tendencies, but then it's like I don't consider myself a perfectionist because it's just kind of like, fuck it.
Yeah.
Let's just, you know, build on that. But okay. I don't know. Like, I definitely.
Well, your style, like, it seems, yeah, like, I mean, it lends itself kind of, to.
It's like anti-perfectionist.
Yeah.
But
didn't you start trying to draw things perfectly?
No.
No?
You're no.
Oh, okay. She said that in the phone call, but it's okay. No, but it's, yeah, like, Rich, like, you do a lot of hand-drawn stuff. Are you kind of okay with the mistakes and seeing what happens and all that?
I became more okay with the mistakes. Over time, I learned to realize that the mistakes were just me. Like, I'm the mistake. So once I realized, like, oh.
And that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's just guys.
Someone else tweet that.
So once I realized that the mistakes were just my personality infused into whatever it is I was doing, then I became okay with it. And then perfection, I realized, like, that's never going to fucking happen.
No, it's unrealistic.
Don't try. Quit.
Yeah. Let's see. So I feel like creatives often thrive on the inspiration that comes from the highs and lows of a career, of life, and all that. Like, how do you guys handle that? Do you find yourself going through those swings?
Rich?
Well, yeah. I mean, I go through, like, swings all the time, man. I've been in this career for about 10 years now, give or take. And I have been steadily, like, freelance for a year, staff for a year, freelance for a year, staff for a year. And every time I leave whatever position I'm in or whatever condition I'm in, it's probably because of some sort of dissatisfaction with whatever is happening in my life. So when I hit those ebbs and flows, like, or especially like an ebb. Is an ebb down or is a flow down? I don't know. Like whenever I hit, like, this part.
We'll say a valley.
Yeah, when I hit a valley. Then, you know, I've come to understand what those signals are for that valley. So then I'll actively make a course correction, and I think that that'll always happen for the rest of my life. I'm pretty sure that I'll be pretty unhappy with shit, like, until I die. So I figure that if I know what those signals are, then I can make effort to change that.
Yeah. Like, how do you deal with the valleys?
I don't know. Probably not very well.
You say, fuck this shit, I'm out of here.
No. I don't know. I do. I feel like I'm kind of in, like, a weird valley right now. You know? Like, especially, it's really... So I quit this project about 2 years ago where I drew something every single day. So it was like, and I did this for 8 years, and it was like this really consistent form of exercise, like I don't exercise, surprise, but but drawing for me and taking time for myself for me, like I can definitely tell when I haven't spent 30 minutes in a few days where I've just tried something new, tried something different, tried to like even make a list for like a new idea or a new plan or a new installation. I just feel like crap. And that's where I feel like you have to, for me at least, like if I'm not making something every day, I feel really bad and gross. Just like how those of you that like to do good things for your body, like go to the gym and like work out and stuff like that, which is really cool. Like how you start to feel kind of gross. Like I feel gross like that when I haven't like taken at least, again, a small amount of time and like have like spent to just to kind of think about what's next. And I feel like that time has kind of like eroded away. And I just like, I either need to wake up earlier or I need to like go to bed later or something, but it's and I'm trying to reclaim it, you know?
Is there a certain amount of, like, so committing to doing a project every day would be overwhelming to me. Like, is that, like, hey, I'm doing this and the world knows I'm doing this. Is that like a crazy amount of pressure where it suddenly becomes a burden?
It's never a burden.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. That's good. That's the thing. Like it's like, you know, that this is like your day could be so, uncertain. You don't know what's going to be thrown at you, but you know that that time is yours. Yeah. And so that's actually, it turns into something that's very certain, and it turns into a time that is yours. And that's really, it's a pretty special and beautiful thing. And so it's just like, even though it's only 30 minutes or 40 minutes, yeah. like it's like, it was like my meditation basically.
Yeah, that sounds
so
like
it. Yeah, it was great. Very meditative.
That's great. Now, Adam, do you do anything like when you get in those ruts, how do you recognize them and how do you like snap yourself out of it?
I think those ruts are, I mean, that's life, one. Yeah. There's highs and there's lows, there's peaks and there's valleys, and your life is the choices that are how you respond to those valleys or what you do, those signals that you see and you respond to. Like Kate, probably, I've realized that I need this, like, cathartic, alone, transitional time space where I'm somewhere not around anyone I know, and I can draw and write and go through my emails and have just kind of like free form, no structure, time by myself where I'll make something and maybe share it or maybe not share it. And after that, I feel absolutely recharged. Yeah. Like my batteries are like back full again, and it can be 15 or 20 minutes. It's a clarity. It's like you're like raking your yard. It's just like clarity raking.
I love raking the yard. I love mowing the grass. That's been like the best thing since we bought a house 2 years
mowing
ago.
Mowing grass?
Mowing the grass. I love doing yard work. If anybody wants me to mow the yard, I will totally do it. Okay, I do. I love mowing. Okay.
For free. It's for her own therapy.
I'll do it for free. It feels so, it's like immediate satisfaction. You like
yes.
start the freaking mower yes. and you mow the lawn and it's done. And that's it. That's all you need to do. It's great.
Well, there's such a satisfaction of getting something. Like I love when there's like I had a job and there was a dirty mirror.
Clean that fucking mirror.
I cleaned the mirror. I got on a ladder. It was on the ceiling. It was like 20 feet by 10 feet and I spent a half a day with Windex dripping down on my face. But it was such a sense of accomplishment.
Wait, was the mirror on the ceiling?
It was on the ceiling.
Wait, where did you work when you were a kid, Justin? Yeah. Where were these?
It was a nightclub, but it was the WWF restaurant when it was the WWF.
Is that where you got that shirt?
You know, is that where I got the shirt? You asshole. Okay. This is a Warhol camouflage print.
Love that
right?
shirt. I love that shirt.
All right. All right, Adam, do you feel like you have something to prove?
It's
literally the next question.
It's a callback to an earlier conversation, guys. I wasn't just being a dick.
All right, no, in your career, do you feel like you have something to prove?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay, good.
I think I have stuff to prove mostly to myself. And I think every kind of, I don't know if you talk about it like levels or whatever, but I was talking about this today, how the idea of success and how you rate success and how it's so subjective and it's totally something that you make for yourself that you probably, I hope you reach, I hope you get success in your life. But how kind of every time you think you get, or I get to success level, it's now just a new playing field where I feel like I have to get to the next place. And every level that I get to, I always kind of feel like I'm like the worst one there. So it means there's like this constant trying to prove for yourself to to get to this like next stage. I don't know what that means, but I don't think it's bad either. I think it's worth maybe like the idea of being kind of a constant amateur, or being, which I feel like all the time, and I like feeling like, or you know, being competitive with yourself and just striving. That's proving shit to you. And the only thing I have to prove, I think, to others is hopefully doing good work, like hoping that clients are happy and hoping that the people I work with are not angry at me.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a certain level of ambition, which is good, and especially when you're doing it with yourself. But I've realized recently, like, how dangerous it is to keep saying, I'll be happy when, or I'll be happy if. And I feel like that's something I struggled with for a long time. Like, I'll be happy when I've done three or four projects to prove I can do three or four projects to other people. And then you get there, and you're like, it's the grass is greener. You're like, okay, now what? And then it's a constant level of dissatisfaction, which is, it's a hard thing to come to terms with. And it's like, Rich, do you feel like you're always like, all right, I did this. I got a job at Nike. And then you're like, oh, shit, now what?
Yeah.
Like, what do I have now?
Yeah. You know, it's funny.
Not in a depressing way, but.
No. I totally get what you're saying. I feel that, well, on the grass is greener tip, I had this realization that sometimes it's not better and sometimes the grass is shittier. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, I'm really trying to catch myself and not feel like, oh, that other person or the other creative or this other situation would be better because. Yeah. I've really tried to shake myself out of that. So I'm really much more in the state of, like Adam said, being the constant amateur. And I feel like it's the goal towards mastery, but knowing I'll never quite achieve mastery, or at least what I believe mastery to be. So I just feel that I always want to push in some new experience all the time and just live in that constant mode of like going, seeing where the tributaries take me. And like, that's really like where my headspace is right now. I don't know if I'll be able to maintain that energy for the rest of my life. I hope so, in some form.
Well, it's good when you can do that and you can stay in the present and appreciate the present and what you're learning from the present.
Definitely.
As opposed to like, oh, I'm going to look a year ahead and then ignore everything that's in front of me. Yeah.
It's funny because I haven't even really started looking that far ahead anymore.
That's good.
Like, which is good and I guess bad in some ways, but I think like, oh, these are goals that I have. But I'm not like, oh, I'm going to be that dude, like, climbing to the top, like, King fucking Kong or something. Like, I'm just thinking, like, man, I just want to be fucking good at what I do, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I think healthy dissatisfaction is a good thing. Yeah. Because, I mean, I tell my students this, too. Like, if you sit back and you look at something, you're like, I did it. I finally figured this out. Like that's
Pop's legal here, right?
That's kind of a dangerous space to be. And so I think it's really good to again, it's healthy dissatisfaction where you're like, okay, this is good, but what's gonna happen next? Like what's the next thing? And I think that keeps the momentum going and that keeps you moving forward and growing as a creative person too. Yeah.
No, that's great. How do you guys know when to say no to work, or do you ever say no to stuff?
I mean, it's. I've been saying no more, and that's actually been something that's been a little difficult for me because I love saying yes to things, and I think a lot of good things happen when you say yes, even if you're not really quite sure if that's the right thing to do, and you just kind of go with it and it leads to new things. But I do definitely like saying no to things. I mean, I think it's easy to say no to things when it doesn't line up with your own personal moral code, of course, and saying no to things if it's going to, you know, not move your work forward and there's not a lot of money. Like I feel like if it's not gonna move your work forward and there's money, Yeah, because you gotta pay the bills. But I think a lot of it is it's for me. It's like if it doesn't sit right with my set of ethics that I follow. Yeah. I think that's kind of important to remind yourself what those are too.
Totally.
Yeah, I think my everything that I've ever done is built on a foundation of just like a huge yes on the ground that I've been saying for like 20 years. And I have been thinking about this a lot lately. There are yes projects that come in, and I think through experience you realize what is going to be beneficial and what's not going to be beneficial. Yeah. And a lot of time it's people. When you get an email and it's just like a big red flag, yeah. And you're like, this project sounds great, but this person sounds like they might have like killed a dog or something. Yeah. You're like, there's something really weird about this email.
Yeah.
I don't know. When you say yes so much that you start to compromise your own kind of being as a creative thing, I think.
Well, and it's also good to trust your instincts. It's more often than not.
That's what I meant.
You're probably right, yeah. Now, what was your biggest fear when you first started in the business, when you graduated from school and you became a designer, illustrator, creative? Like, what was your biggest fear? And then what is it now?
My biggest fear was, would I ever be able to move out of my parents' house? Yeah. Like, really? Because you start and you're fucking penniless, man. You know, you leave school, you're $80,000 in debt, and then you want to be an illustrator. It's like, it's absurd. It's like, how are you ever going to make that back? So once you start a career, once you get that ball rolling, then, you know, balls turn into snowmen and snowmen turn into, I don't know, abdominal snowmen. I don't know. My lost my analogy. But like, once you get on that track, then you realize like, oh, this is just it's a career.
Adam, anybody else?
I love that snowballs turn into snowmen. And so basically, any snowball is an egg of an abominable snowman.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
A snowman is a baby abominable snowman.
Yeah, so every time you step on a snowball, you're killing an abominable snowman's baby.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, well, sorry to break it to you.
New York is crazy.
Hashtag W, not NW overshare. I don't know.
It's close enough. What's your biggest creative insecurity? Like, what's the thing you're just awful at, and you're terrible at, like...
I'm terrible at typography.
Like, are you kerning terrifies you?
I will never... If someone was like, I need you to lay out a magazine, I will literally pass out. And thankfully, I'm an illustrator, so...
You don't have to do that
there
shit.
There you go.
My biggest insecurity is when you're in a group conversation and then you have input and then you realize the thing you said has like no bearing on the conversation. And then someone who's an expert in whatever it is that you said is like, oh, actually, you're like, shit. It's like, I'm just,
okay.
Yeah.
But we still love you.
Yeah, but I'm, that discovery of fraud is just the worst. That moment, haunts my dreams.
Adam, what's your biggest fear?
I don't know. I think.
Adam can do everything, though.
No,
but you seem like you can. I always use you as an example as someone who's like, Adam can do type, he can do illustration, he can do art direction, he can do events. Sorry, not to pump you up too
real,
much.
That's
but like,
real nice, because I feel like I'm pretty not good at all of them. I just do them a lot and then don't ever look at them again and keep going and hope it was good and just keep going. That's my strategy.
A lot of people have different definitions of failure. What do you consider your biggest failure, or do you even believe in such thing?
Well, let me think here. I have a weird relationship to failure, I guess. I actually have a really vivid conversation with that I remember when I was 23, and I had just started dating my now husband, and we were sitting in the car, and I was about to tell him about how much credit card debt I had. And
the talk.
it was the talk.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, I just remember this so vividly. I think this was in a parking lot in Nebraska. Thank you. I'll make it even more local for Nebraska. It was in a Runza parking lot. Now, which, if anyone knows Runza, they make sandwiches where the meat's baked inside the bread. It's cool.
That's going to be huge in about 1 month here. Someone's like, oh, shit, I'm going to do that. I'm going to make an amazing logo. It's going to be awesome.
But I
and
do,
it'll be a truck.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. You know what? That'd
yeah,
actually
welcome.
Be pretty brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay. But I do think, I still have this constant fear of just letting people down and disappointing people almost to it's a detriment to my own well-being, I think, you know? It's just like I don't want to let people down. And I remember having, again, like that conversation, be like, I really was convinced in my mind that this man who wanted to marry me was going to break up with me when I told him how much credit card debt I had. Like, I thought that was just a deal breaker right there. But then it's just like, because I let this person down. And it's just like this kind of constant thing. And now, like, so many years later, I'm still kind of struggling with that. Like, well, I don't want to let anybody down.
But then you're doing it to your own detriment. And
oh,
the
completely.
Things that you want and the things
I'm
you're
letting
happy
myself
and prioritizing yourself.
Down
yeah.
by having that attitude. And I know, like, and it's... And I even try to tell my students, like, don't do the things that I, you know, don't do as I do, do what I say. but yeah, it's yeah. Anyway. Oh.
Adam, what's your take on failure? What's your relationship to it? Do you believe in it?
Yeah, I do believe it exists. I think it's also subjective, though. I mean, failure is like you talk about success. Failure is, I guess, the opposite of that for you. I feel like I have massive successes and massive failures every day, and then I move on past them and hopefully learn from them and apply them in a different way, right? That's what we do, we're people. I think, like, it's weird to say this, I'm a pretty insecure dude in general, and I know that comes from some other thing, but I think failure for me would be a kind of like, it'd probably be something visual and it would be public. And I think that's what's weird about, like, we do a lot of events, and I've been on a lot of microphones, and we host a lot of things, but one of my biggest fears is kind of like this, so it's kind of been a constant catharsis in a way.
Yeah, it's good to push yourself, though.
Yeah, you just got to black everyone out, pretend they're all naked, which they are right now. And
Yeah. Rich, do you have anything to add to that?
My biggest thing with failure is, honestly... It's going to sound super cheesy, but it's letting my parents down in a weird way. Because being the child of an immigrant, it's like a really meaningful thing. Like, my parents, they came to the United States from the Philippines when they were 20 years old, both after, like, a parent had died. And then they had to send money back to the Philippines in order to, like, sustain a family of, like, 10 kids on my mom's side, 9 kids on my dad's side. And then they met here in the States separately. So they came of their own regard. So I'm thinking, like, shit, I gotta live up to that, you know? Like, my mom ended up being, like, a doctor. My dad ended up being an architect and really, like, doing amazing things off of pennies, man. Pennies in the Philippines. So I look at that, I'm like, I can't not fail that legacy. I gotta at least do something with my life. So, you know, just having them... you know, see my success as the anti-failure for me.
Wow, that's really nice. That's not cheesy at all.
Yeah, thanks.
We have a few more minutes left, so let's see. Who makes you jealous? I know you guys can take this. You can say me.
Jealous is... I don't think it's jealousy, but I think when it comes to maybe a quality... a human quality that I'm envious of, that I feel like I lack. Honestly, most people that I meet, I'll find something. I'm being totally serious. I'll be like, oh, I love that woman has amazing posture. I wish I had better posture. That guy makes great eye contact. His fitted pants. I can't do that. How does he do that? I feel like that about most everybody.
But that's like such a nice thing to appreciate the little things in people.
No, it sucks.
No.
yeah, it sucks.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about it.
I don't know if it's jealousy necessarily, but I think it's as I'm getting older and I'm, you know, around students quite a bit, It's not that I'm jealous. I am so excited about the stages that they are in and starting out and everything being new and learning new things and just kind of like discovering their own skills and talents and like what they can do. Like that feeling is so.
It's like watching a baby learn how to like.
It's so wonderful and I don't have that anymore.
but there's probably things in your life, like if you were to get like a manual push mower, that you would be like, oh, that's a new thing to me.
It's true.
And I'm going to experience something new and I can master that.
Weed whacker.
See, there you go.
I know.
That's your joy in your open door of discovery is a weed whacker and maybe a hoe.
Or
a trowel or something. Yeah.
I say what makes me jealous?
Yeah, sure.
You're so enthusiastic. Like, it's okay, I could just go sit behind the bar, too, if you want.
I love you, Rich.
What makes me jealous is when someone does a thing that I did better. When someone does a thing that I did better. Like, when I see, like, something that I kind of failed at, and then they crush it, I'm like, damn!
Yeah.
They were able to solve it. They cracked the code.
Yeah. I feel that a lot. Yeah, that's good.
Hey, Justin.
Yes.
Can I read something?
Yeah, please.
He's prepared.
I've been
something.
Reading shit all night, so go for it.
This is a poem. No, this is not a poem. It's not a poem. So
I like
chill
this.
Out. I was joking.
It was a cold winter.
I was hoping we were going to talk about failure because I wanted to read this because it really affected me a couple years ago. Is it cool? Rich, you all right? Kate, you cool with this?
I'm fine. I'm 100.
Allie, you all right?
I'm 100 about it.
All right, good.
That means that's New York slang for good, right?
Yeah.
Cool. He loves math. This is a home.
I'm Asian. I love math.
It's fucked up. This is a homegirl of mine from Minneapolis. This is from a commencement speech she wrote in 2012. And it's all about failure, and I think it's pretty applicable. So I transcribed it and sent it to myself just for this occasion. Justin, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, I'm
ready. Hit me.
It's tight. Okay. She says, I think that if you pursue those goals that you know you're really, really likely to achieve, you live like an iceberg with the vast majority of yourself, Rich, undiscovered and unknowable even to yourself. Failure is a tool, like how pain is important and removes your hands from burners, etc. It's a tool we use to demarcate the edges of our abilities. Pretty dope. She says, go and find out empirically what you can and can't do, and don't leave the markings of those borders to speculation, to yours or your friends or your parents. Go find out.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well done, yeah. Who said that? Yeah.
Yeah, that's not me. That's a girl named Dessa, who's a musician from Minneapolis. That's a philosopher and an artist, and she's dope.
That's really great.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We have 100. Like two more questions. Are you happy? Whoa. I feel like everybody is just like a whoosh. Are you guys?
I'm really happy right now.
Right now? Yeah. That's good.
I found that moments of this kind of like, not just like being on a microphone in front of people, but talking about kind of like real shit resonates. And that's all I want out of my life from now on is constant, just real shit.
Yeah.
For real.
I like that.
I am happy. I can confidently say I'm happy because I think I've found my avenue towards adulthood, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, I'm happy now.
That's good.
Yeah.
Clarity's good, yeah.
I am. And I think it's like a process of figuring out and kind of re-engineering like what the definition of happy is and like trying to just, you know, sometimes you have to like reshift things and sometimes you have to recalculate what the happiness formula is because like what worked a year ago isn't what's going to work now. And I think as long as you're kind of open to figuring out what that is and working towards that, then that's on your way to happiness, I guess.
Yeah, and I agree with that. It's like having the adaptability to be okay with whatever happens and going with it. If you had to give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Get over yourself.
It's a good one.
It's okay to be loud.
You know,
Yes.
I didn't even mean to say that to be funny. I think about the way that I was, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. Like,
and you're 25, so that's perfect.
I am 25. Thank you. I am 25. But just spending a lot of worry about what people are thinking of me, trying not to have people notice me, trying not to have people listen to me, was a lot of time that I wasted being up against the wall. And so it's really important to me, especially to my female students too, that it's okay to be loud. So be loud.
And to have a voice. Yeah, absolutely.
I think I don't have any big regrets in general, but I think one thing might be the idea of just like, we all talk a lot, and I think that taking action rather than talking, if I could go back, I would probably say, like, do the things, you know? Don't talk about them, do them. And I think that applies to everything, whether it's, I don't know, taking action to every single piece of your life, you know? Just, like, stepping across your bounds, getting through your insecurities, and fucking doing stuff.
Doing it. I like it. Well, on that note, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
I'm excited because I got through that. I didn't get emotional. And none of us, you know, it was good. Was that good? It was good? All right, now who has questions? I'll come out. I'll bring you the mic. Anybody have a question? Question. Maybe more personal than anything I just asked. Let's make it super personal. No, you can ask anything you want. Here you go. And say your name.
Hello, I'm Ren. What was it like speaking in front of a public audience like this for the first time?
Is this the first time for any of us?
No, I'm happy that you all came out.
Oh, no, back in the day, when it was your first time.
Oh, when was our first time?
That's a big hurdle. That's a big hurdle when you haven't done it before to say, hey, I'm going to come out here.
It's always scary, you know? And I feel like from the first time that you talk in front of people to the most recent time that you talk in front of people, I think it's a very nerve-wracking thing, and it's a very humbling thing, too. And again, like, oh, thanks for coming out.
It's harder without the tightrope. Or it's harder on the tightrope. Because I know that like any other...
What?
It's harder... It's harder when there's no net to catch you. Because I know that like any other time that I do some sort of public thing, there's usually a presentation that I can just like lean on. It's like, hey, look at that shit. Let's talk about it. But then when you don't know exactly what you're going to say, it's always a little bit harder. So that's it.
Hence only the brave. Yeah.
Exactly.
Anybody else? Another question? Since I'm over here.
Hi, I'm Hannah.
Hi.
What's up, Hannah?
How's it going?
Hannah.
Where do you guys draw most of your fulfillment from? Like, we all have, like, the bread and butter stuff that you got to do to get by and keep the lights on, but, like, where do you guys draw your real fulfillment?
I can answer this. Helping other people. I think I spent a lot of time helping myself for the majority of my career, and now that I'm in a position to help other people, it's so much more rewarding. And I think as a teacher, probably you feel that too.
And definitely. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I quit that administrative position, is because I was only teaching one class this term, and it was kind of driving me a little bit crazy. And it's being in the classroom that makes me feel really good. And it's also, you know, doing stuff like Design Week Portland and just like kind of making events happen, making people meet each other, making this type of like engagement happen. Like that's a real strong sense of fulfillment, definitely.
I think my fulfillment, I've realized recently, it's not only from producing, which I think we all have this kind of compulsive act to produce and put into the world. I've realized that my compulsive action of putting things into the world and making comes back to wanting to feel connected to people. And I found this very direct way of feeling connected to people through having incredible conversations. And I've found that over the last year, I feel most fulfilled after leaving a great conversation and feeling like electrified and epiphanic.
I think my fulfillment comes from, you know, just living a creative life, But I know that when I know I feel fulfilled specifically or in my really quiet moments and I'm sitting at home, probably with my fiance or something, or just watching a movie that we like, and we're actually slowing down a bit and we think, you know, this is the life. We're living this life and we're actually enjoying this moment. And that brings me a lot of satisfaction.
We're really happy you're in Portland.
Thanks, man. I'm really happy to be here too, honestly.
That's
really
a great question. Great question. You had a question as well?
Hey, I'm Camille. This is really nerve-wracking.
You're doing great.
So I feel like, you know, in this world we live in, mostly I'm thinking of Instagram, but just social media, internet, starting out in a really cliche way, but I feel like I'm just constantly, you know, bombarded with artists, images, information. A lot of the time it feels like, you know, things that I'm not necessarily doing. But I always just feel this, like, I feel really rushed a lot of the time. Like, I just have to be putting work out and have to be, like, taking photos and putting it on Instagram and just putting it out there, you know? But I don't know if that's, I don't know if there's value in that and, like, kind of pushing myself and trying to get work out there, or if there's value in, you know, slowing down and being patient and kind of thinking through things more. So I don't know, can you guys like maybe touch on a time where you were really patient and it totally paid off, or maybe on the other end, like, you know, you just fucking hustled and it, you know, maybe like it wasn't your best work, but it was important. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think Rich and Kate both do a really good job of creating systems of production for themselves, right? I mean, Rich earlier was talking about how every morning he'll wake up and put this drawing out. It's on Facebook, it's on Instagram. It's as much for him as it is for everyone else to see how dope he is. But it's for him, it's exercising. It really is. It's an exercise. But you kind of compartmentalize. You're not willy-nilly just like throwing things into the wilderness. And your career has maybe been based on a lot of things, but also creating systems of production inside this insanity that is the internet, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's also, it's for me at least, it was important to kind of create those systems, but then it was also really important to make those real life connections too. And I think being skillfully nimble online and offline, like you've got to have that balance between the two. And so again, but I completely understand, like, oh, I just want to like slow down. And that's okay. Yeah. You can do that too. But I think it's sometimes it's
well, do you think all right, so in the Instagram era, like you have, okay, how many Instagram followers do you have? 20,000? Yeah. All right, do you feel like, and I think a lot of this motivation is like, all right, do I not feel validated as a creative person if I'm putting things out into the world via Instagram, whatever, and they're not getting 100 likes, or I don't have 5,000 followers and
old.
All that?
I've been on the internet since it started.
But I think there is a certain, like, I can go and look at my friends and see that they have 2,000 more Instagram followers than me, and I feel like there might be some pressure there to, like, start, like, building an audience, putting your work out there more, and then once you get an audience, are you feeling the pressure to start delivering and putting work out there for them instead of just for you? Like, are you then like, oh, I need to like feed this beast?
I think that comes back to the compartmentalization of it, because I think if you look at Instagram and like those forms of social media where it is like very curated, I think that is, if you look at it like it's an exercise, I know for me, I started waking up at 5:30 in the morning and like busting out like an image and wanting to put it out there, but that's because I like being fast and I like speed. And it's like a cup of coffee to me in the morning. And then once I got over the fact, like, are people even gonna like this? Do people even see it? Do they care? Do they give a shit? And I just started getting into the mode of cranking. Then, like, you know, I didn't even look at likes anymore. I didn't even look at, like, what reaction was. I was just like, I know this is a me thing. And I was embracing the disposability of it and the exercise of it. And then there's some people that, like, that don't have any followers that are just putting out beautiful, gorgeous work, and I applaud them even more so.
I think that's where it gets hard. It's because like design has a scorecard now.
Yeah.
And you're constantly, it's so easy to compare yourself to everybody else. And, well, shit, their thing got 200 likes and mine got 100 likes. And so I think everyone should stop giving a fuck and stop comparing yourself to everybody else. Like, I think, Rich, you should do all of that stuff and then for like a week, don't put it online. Just do it for you.
Yeah, totally. Oh, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
Because I don't fully believe that you're not putting it out.
But we want to see it.
Yeah, we do want to see it.
So don't.
Yeah. Okay.
Just put it out, put it online.
Just email us. We'll start the email chain here.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, we had another question here.
Thanks. Hey, guys. So I hear several of you have come here, or a couple of you came here pretty recently, and then you've been here for a little while. But so I just moved here about a year ago and started my own agency. So I'm like...
Congratulations. That's amazing.
Oh, thanks. So I'm in a new city by myself. I don't know anybody. So when you're in that situation, especially if you're working by yourself, you don't have a team around you of like built-in friends in your agency. So what do you do? How do you tackle that?
I suggest introducing yourself to everybody.
Yeah, exactly. I'm Justin. Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Honestly, Adam became my friend hack. So, like, we became friends when I moved. It's okay, you don't have to, like, you know, be so stone-faced
about
that.
Trying to be cool, man.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, shit, are we friends? I have no idea now. How do I even gauge this situation?
Sorry, do you have an answer? I was going to try to get...
My thing was just surround yourself or just, you know, try to latch into a community. Once you latch into a community, then really it's like the hack, the life hack.
I think meeting people here is the way to...
Totally. This community
advice.
Right here.
Anybody over here have a question, like a quick question? Yes.
So earlier you mentioned about how if you don't do something creative for a couple days, you feel gross, kind of like somebody who usually goes to the gym. If they don't go to the gym, they feel gross.
I should go to the gym, though.
We probably all should. I'm at a point where it's, for me, my insecurity isn't about getting my stuff in front of other people because I frankly don't really participate in Instagram culture.
That's not about getting myself in front of people. It's about making me feel like I'm a creative person who's like part of like making something too.
Right. Yeah. But my point was, how do I get out of my own way? Like, it's not about showing stuff to other people and being part of that flow. It's about like, how do I... I'm my own biggest critic.
Of course.
And that keeps me from producing in a way that I want to produce. And so what's the best way to get over that shit?
You've got to make piles of crap.
Yeah, I think what you did, like holding yourself to like a set of rules and say, hey, every day I'm going to do this thing and apply these rules and I'm going to do it whether it's good or it's not and I'm just going to churn it out.
And don't have like these super high expectations for yourself either. But I think as long as you keep making these piles of crap, like 1% of that crap is actually going to be something that you can build on. And then you got to make piles.
Well, and there's people out there, like there's Brock Davis and there's a couple other folks. Josh Lafayette, I think, was doing a drawing every day. I think they put that stuff out there even though they know it's not good. But then you start to see, oh, there's an area of interest. And then for a week, it's like going down that path. But then suddenly something else comes up and it's going down that path. And I think it's allowing yourself the opportunity to explore that stuff, even if it's not good. But I think putting a set of rules on it really helps.
Yeah, I think there's an idea of like, we talk about the idea of relentlessness a lot in our studio. Like relentlessness.
That's my favorite word.
It is?
Yes.
That's a good word.
Yeah, it's so good.
Right, Anton.
Relentless.
Relentlessness.
Yeah.
That word's 100.
Relentless making. And it has nothing to do with other people. It's about you just being a part and creating and...
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. That's good. We got time for one more because I know it's hot in here and people want to get another beer. We're all going to hang out. Who's going to most emphatically raise their hand? Most emphatically. All right. Well, I already did that side. I'm going to go here. Okay, sorry.
So I'll be the one that talks politics. And not in the bad way.
Collective grown.
Religion.
Yeah, I know. Well, and I bring it up because... So often, going through the journalism school at the University of Oregon, being around designers, whenever there's a conversation around politics, you'll have a lot of people say, ah, I'm a designer, I don't want to talk politics. There's almost a divide. And it seems like with more pop culture diving into politics, whether it's Orange is the New Black, shedding light on transgender issues, or shirts that say the future is female, or Vice Television looking at gaycation and gay rights, there seems to be a coming together of art and culture and politics. And Kate talked about, you know, women standing up and being loud. So all that said, do you feel a pressure, and I know the pressure is good for you, Adam. I know that.
Oh, my God.
I know that. Do you feel a pressure to be active and have a voice through your design in today's political culture to say something, whether it's implicit or otherwise? Or is that something that you let other people talk about and you just want to focus on your work?
Can I?
Go for it.
So I'm not incredibly outspokenly political, but I'm very liberal and I believe what I believe. And in our studio, like there's other people in my studio who are very outspokenly political. I choose not to necessarily project that on social media channels, but I do have my beliefs. I feel like the action that I take, like when you talk about relentlessness, politics isn't only who you vote for, it's also who you deal with on a daily basis, who you choose to work with and collaborate with and pay and support in your day-to-day life. I feel like my political actions in the world are very much through the platforms that I create and the people that I choose to create with, as well as, of course, who I'm going to vote for. So, but I think that relentlessness when it comes to politics is kind of also relentlessly being yourself. And whether you're, you know, in Portland especially, like we talk about race a lot in Portland, and my friends and I talk about what's happening, the transition in Portland, new people coming here, how supportive you can be, how you can evolve, how you can talk about these things here in the city that we live in, like look around. I mean, this is Portland, and it's changing, and there's a chance to evolve and, like, you know, it's a great shirt. But did that make any sense?
Yeah. Totally.
Oh, yeah, that totally makes sense.
Anybody else have anything to add?
No, I mean, like, I feel like I already talked about that a little bit. Like, it's definitely not my agenda, but maybe it is a little bit my agenda. Where it's, I was just on a panel last week where we spoke with a bunch of teenage girls, and it was a huge event where everyone was making zines, and I called in a bunch of my former female students, and it was just very much about the importance of being loud, being heard, and not being afraid to let your voice, you know, be out there. And so it's important to me that both my, you know, all of my students feel like they have a strong voice and have something to say, but it's also something where I definitely want to encourage that in my female students too, because I know I was that person that didn't want to be looked at, didn't want to be talking to, didn't think that what I had to say was important. And I don't want anyone in my class to feel like what they have to say isn't important. And I want to create that space so those things can be said and that they'll start to say it more often too.
And I think that applies to all of us. So we all have a point of view and we all have voices that should be heard regardless of our opinions. And to be out there and be authentic with it is really important. So that's a great question. Thank you all.
Thank you.
This episode was brought to you by FreshBooks. Two Working Not Working members, Cooper Smith and Marcus Gartrell, interviewed FreshBooks for an upcoming special episode called Ask an Expert, where we ask smart people who know the things we don't about the things we should. This episode, called Get Rich or Die Crying, is all about how freelancers can get paid on time and how over-designing your invoices is probably not a good idea.
I think it starts with your own colleagues. And it's, again, kind of sticky and weird, like asking someone what their salary is. It starts with just approaching the topic in general, saying, hey, does anyone else have this similar issue that, like, I don't want to bring this up. I don't know what's an uncool thing to bring up with my clients. I think just talking about it in the first place, just bringing it up out of this mystery shroud is the first step personally.
Another one too is, you know, look at your costs, you know, and look at how much it costs for you to live. You know, one thing we think about is your best case and worst case, right? So your best case is, okay, what kind of salary are you looking for? And that's what you want to strive for. But then in the worst case, okay, what are my bills right now? And it's kind of that nitty gritty stuff that nobody wants to think about, but like your rent, your mortgage, if you have that, life expenses, a cushion, and see how much you need to survive, and then work out what sort of revenue you're looking through for that month, and then work out from there, you know, how much you should charge.
Be Be sure to listen to that upcoming episode, available for download soon. Thanks to all the members who came out that day to hear them, and also to you for listening on this little podcast. To read more about this episode, check out freerange.workingnotworking.com, and to learn more about how to join Working Not Working, go to workingnotworking.com. You can follow us at WNotW and tweet us questions with the hashtag WNWOvershare. Anyway, that's it for today's episode. Thanks for coming, and see you next time.